Tango Tango Papa 1855, August 14, 2014.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from LaSalle, Illinois. So it's been, I guess, probably about 4 or probably 5 days, I believe, since the last podcast. I was in Southern California, and so now, let's see, I ended up going from Southern California to Nebraska, and then from Nebraska, now I'm on my way to with a 2-drop load. First drop is on the 16th. Today's the 14th. The 16th at 10 a.m. in St. John's, Michigan, and then the second drop delivers on the 17th at 10 a.m. in Cincinnati, Ohio. So I've made it to LaSalle, Illinois. I've still got, 300 and something more miles to drive tomorrow. And then, as I say, the load, today was Thursday. So Friday delivers Saturday the 17th at 10 a.m. is the first drop. So that's a little bit, not quite as a frantic of a schedule as I've kind of had in the past. It's a little bit more relaxed, and I don't know if that's really, if anything has changed, or if that's just the way that it's worked out, but I kind of prefer it a little bit more relaxed. What can I say? So the weather has continued to remain cool, and we're getting into, this is mid-August now, and it could be very, very hot, and it's actually pretty pleasant. It's more like September-type weather. It's really, so what's going to happen in September? But this is, it's pretty pleasant. I'm not complaining. In any case, I'll be reading more. I think we're ready for Chapter 10 from Gravity Driven Universe, the book 2, the second part of the book by Roy Masters. I'll be reading that here in a bit. And I've also got some, Scott Mitchell sent me some links to public service announcements from the 1940s. And of course, if you dig, there's tons and tons and tons of public service announcements that have been around for a long time. And so these, Scott kind of thought that they were more of a left-wing type of bent, and I'm going to play them and discuss them as I do, but I really don't see it that way. They don't really come across to me as left-wing or left-leaning, but I'll discuss them one at a time as I play them. They're all pretty short pieces. In any case, state of the world, it's falling apart, and it's because of the same problem. America has lost its morals, and they've gone right down the drain, and it's to the point now where the structure that's sort of been undermined because the morals are gone, the moral foundation is gone, the structure is beginning to crumble, and what you're seeing is that that is causing problems all around the world. There are people that think America is the problem. America is the world's problem, and so if we could just get America out of the equation, you'd have utopia. And of course, it's exactly the opposite. You know, you take America's morals away, and look at what happens. And then you have, of course, we've also at the same time we have kind of destroyed our own borders, especially our southern border. We're not enforcing it anymore. And I had someone ask me, well, what would you, you know, if you were in Obama's place, what would you do? How did Erica, you know, he handled it. You have to be compassionate. You can't turn the children away and so on and so forth. Well, let's start at the beginning. Do we have this sudden surge of children? And I think it's because before this, they have been not enforcing the border, and this has been going on for a long time. We've been weak. We, you know, nod, nod, wink, wink. We'll let you in, and even if you're illegal, we'll probably just go ahead and let you stay. And so this has just progressively gotten worse and over a period of years, to the point now where the government's saying, oh, well, we're not going to deport these people. We'll just let them stay. And that's an invitation. That's like switching on a magnet and asking, you know, and just telling people, hey, America's not going to enforce this border. You know, it's a better place than what you've got wherever you're at. You know, have at it. Come on in. And then, of course, the you know, I've read headlines and stories where the Mexican drug cartels, which, by the way, exist only because we're so rotten. Who are the users? Who are the drug cartels supporting? It's us, of course. We're creating the demand. The United States has been creating the demand because of our moral depravity, breakup of the family, so on and so forth. And that's really, it really revolves around the breakup of the family. And so once that's gone, once that foundation is gone, then it, you know, it's like switching on a magnet. Go ahead and come on in and have at it. You know, they're not going to deport you. And, you know, and those Mexican cartels are using the kids because they know that we have how can you be so cruel? You can't turn these poor kids away and so on and so forth. And so in the meantime, anything and everything's coming in. And we've done it to ourselves. So we deserve what's happening. You look at the history of every major civilization, every major empire, you look at their history and look at what happens, and then, you know, sooner or later, they go, the details are maybe a little different, but the general principles are always the same. And, the Roman Empire is a great example. Look at how it finally just disintegrated. It fell apart. And that's what's happening to us. So we'll end up with wars and dictators and God knows what. But in the meantime, the stabilizing influence of the United States is sort of gone missing. And it's going to be bad around the world as well. It already is, and it's going to get worse. It's going to get much, much worse. So I don't have any kids, never have had, won't have. And but I feel sorry for, it's unfortunate for the people that have brought kids into the world, for the people that have, because the kids today face a pretty bleak world, and their parents have pushed them into it. You know, the parents have prepared the world, you know, each one of us, and you think, oh, it's someone else's fault, it can't be my fault, I didn't do it. Well, yes, you did. You know, did you have sex outside of marriage? Did you you try to twist it and make it seem like it's okay, and you twist other people's minds around to try to say that it's really okay to kill your baby, it's really okay to do this, and it's really okay to do that? Well, then you're getting the world, you created the world that you deserve. And, we deserve what we're going to get, what we're getting. It's not what we're going to get, it's also what we're going to get, but what we're actually receiving right now. So, I'm here to rub your... I've been saying all along that when these things happened, I was going to be around to rub people's nose in it, and I'm here. So, anyway, I'm going to go ahead and play these old PSAs, and I think they're from the 40s, and I don't remember. Scott said Scott's a little bit older than I am. He said he remembered hearing them on the radio. I don't. I really kind of started listening to the radio probably, I'm guessing, sometime in the probably the early 60s. Early to mid 60s is when I really started listening to the radio. That's when, you know, my dad brought home a transistor radio, which was, that was kind of the new thing at the time. And that's when I really, sort of started me on the journey to, I found very quickly that I enjoyed electronics. And so I listened to that radio for, a number of years. I think it eventually quit, but I listened to that thing for years and years. And, so I don't remember really those PSAs, but of course I was in Kansas where I grew up. I grew up in Kansas, and of course Scott's in the northeastern part of the country. So there's different radio stations and, different types of things were going on, I'm sure, as far as PSAs go. Or PSA is just public service announcement. But, so there's, I'm sure if you, if I would really dig, there's probably, because the internet is just chock full of old public service announcements, and I'm sure there's some pretty interesting ones. So, anyway, I'm going to go ahead and play the first one, and I'll be back to comment on it.
What makes a good American? What do you have to be? Am I a good American? Let's take a look and see. I like democracy. I'm for equality. I say be neighborly. Do I practice what I preach? What makes a good American? What do you have to be? Am I a good American? Let's look again and see. I don't care where you're from. I go by what you are. I stand up for my rights. But do I stand up for yours? What makes a good American? What do you have to do? Am I a good American? And by the way, are you?
Okay, so that was the first one, What Makes a Good American? And that doesn't seem very left-wing to me. That seems reasonable. Of course you don't. America is made up of people from that were basically sort of self-selected refugees from other parts of the world. Obviously mostly Europe, but other parts of the world. And so the idea being that if you're reasonable, then you understand that people don't, all human beings don't look alike, all human beings don't talk quite alike, and so on and so forth. And so these, you know, physical characteristics, you shouldn't base, you know, whether you like someone or not, or whether you extend them citizenship based on these different things. Now, you know, but the idea of America is that politically we're all equal. You know, that's not to say that everybody has to be made equal via government, you know, because that's been twisted around. But the idea is that, sure, we're all different, and we all have different talents, we all look different, and so on and so forth, but politically we're all the same. And so that's very reasonable. Where it becomes unreasonable is when, you know, let's say that I'm, you know, that I am in favor of abortion, and I want to force you to, you know, kind of accept my abortion. You know, I'm going to force it on you, and you have to love me, and kind of help me take my guilt away about it, because, you know, whether you believe me or not, abortion is wrong, and abortion is murder. 100%, it's murder. Murder in the womb. And once you sort of take that step, you know, let's say, you know, just imagine you're a female and you've had an abortion. You got tricked into having sex, you know, kind of opening your legs and having sex. And then you want to get rid of the unwanted byproduct of sex. And so you have an abortion. And then imagine the guilt you feel afterwards. You know, so then, you know, you don't want to admit that you were wrong. And so therefore, then you try to twist it around in your mind and get other people to sort of help you believe that wrong is right and right is wrong. And, you know, and then you have to, but it never works. It, you know, the guilt always has a tendency to kind of catch up to you. So you think, well, it must be these other people that are saying that abortion is murder. They're the ones that are making me feel, somehow they're making me feel guilty. So if I could just eradicate those people, force everybody to think that it's okay, it's going to take the stigma away, it's going to take the guilt away, and I'll be happy. And of course they're not, because the guilt always catches up. Because there is such a thing as right and wrong. Whether you want to believe that or not, we are created beings, and there is a standard by which we're to live, but it's not dictated to us. We as human beings have a choice, and if we choose the wrong thing, of course, the guilt is there to kind of sort of like the speed bumps to get us to come back. You know, get you to come back into the lane. You know, kind of straighten your life back out. And where you make your mistake is you run from the guilt. Run away from the guilt. Hide, you know, try to distract yourself away from it. Outshout it. Outshout your conscience. And you simply make yourself worse. And so we have a nation of people that have made themselves worse. They've, you know, Americans have been corrupting, especially the last, you know, since the it started in the 40s and really the 50s, evidence of it's the 1960s. And so we've been, you know, we've had generation after generation where parents have corrupted their kids. In many cases, they sort of ineptly did it by sending their kids to public school, or they deliberately did it because they wanted to, maybe they had illicit sex or whatever, or they, you know, or divorce and what have you, and you know, have all the boyfriends over, a new boyfriend every night or whatever. And so those kids are raised in that, and so you twist the kids' perceptions, you try to screw their perceptions up, because they know that it's wrong. Little kids will cover their eyes. They know that, you know, you show them something like that, and they go, ooh, they know it's wrong. And so therefore, you know, but the parents will try to force the kids to, you know, to basically tell them that green is pink, that black is, you know, it's black is really white, wrong is really right, and right is really wrong, because, you know, I'm going to teach you how to, you know, to have the proper, you know, proper conscience, and there's all these shades of gray and so on and so forth. And of course there, it's just all lies. And once you start down the slippery slope, and you're going in the wrong direction, then it just gets worse and worse and worse, and it becomes a bottomless pit. So I'd be shocked if, you know, there are no PSAs like this on the radio today. Now, I don't know who still, I guess there are still people that are listening to the radio. I don't know who they are, but I haven't listened to the radio in, jiminy, really years. Even casually, I can't tell you the last time I turned a radio station on. It's been, oh shoot. Maybe by accident I bumped it with my foot or something. I don't know, but I certainly didn't have it tuned into anything, and I turned it off. So, that seems pretty innocuous. So let's go ahead and listen to the next one.
Old Commodore Gray had a dog and a cat with a big bow-wow and a little meow. They all lived together with never a spat. How in the world did they ever do that with a big bow-wow and a little meow, meow, bow-wow, meow, bow-wow, meow. The cat and the dog had a barrel of fun with a big bow-wow and a little meow. Although they were different, they fooled everyone. Commodore Gray proved a lot can be done with a big bow-wow and a little meow, meow, bow-wow, meow, bow-wow, meow. Well, Commodore Gray often said to the crew with a big bow-wow and a little meow, though each man among us is different, it's true. My cat and dog get along, so can you, with a big bow-wow and a little meow. Meow, bow-wow, meow, bow-wow, a big bow-wow and a little meow.
Okay, so there's the second one. That one, I don't know, it's trying to suggest... you know, the Commodore Gray, he had a cat and a dog, and somehow he was able to get the cat and the dog to coexist, and it seems to be kind of encouraging the listener that, you know, they should be able to get along too, I guess. That one has a, I don't know, it's a bit of a vague message, but it's still pleasant. It's still a pleasant, you know, it's kind of a pleasant little thing. And a lot of these jingles, they're done by a group called the Jesters. And, you know, the ones I've listened to pretty much all kind of sound very similar. You know, so the, obviously the same people performed them using kind of the same instruments and the same type of very similar style. That one's, you know, doesn't seem very earth-shattering. It's just kind of encouraging, I guess, people to get along with each other. Which is, you know, still it's a nice message.
It seems to me the world is getting smaller every day. Or is it that we're nearer to the places far away? The speeding train, the fleeting plane, the radio and phone have made the world my neighbor, so my neighborhood has grown.
Traveling broadens one.
A little English friend of mine said, come and play with me. I took a plane one morning and arrived in time for tea. Before I went to bed, I said, I'd like to talk to Ma. He said, pick up the telephone and tell her how you are.
Traveling broadens one.
I've got a cousin in Brazil, my uncle lives in France. In Ireland and in Mexico, I have two favorite aunts. I know a girl in Russia and a boy in Italy. I think of them as neighbors 'cause they seem so close to me.
Traveling broadens one.
All right, so that was the third one. And I think I'm going to cut this off at the third one. There's still at least six or seven more, and so I'm going to save those for next podcast, or maybe more than one. So in any case, this one they're suggesting, well, if you travel, it's going to broaden your horizons and so on and so forth, which is true. But there's this idea and this is kind of an implied thing, and it's still around, and people still have this idea. I thought this myself. If you could just visit these other people, you'd find out that they're people just like you are, and so on and so forth, and that's true. That's actually quite true, but that's not going to create world peace, and here's why. Because each nation has its own insanity. We kind of as a group create an insane government, and the more depraved we are individually, and then the more depraved individuals there are in a nation, the more out of control the government ends up becoming. And so our government is just insane at this point. The United States government is lost its sanity. It's been going on for a long time, and it's not just one party. It's both parties. It's lost its sanity, and we'll never get rid of it. It's just going to get worse and worse and worse. And if we do get rid of it, we're going to trade it for something much worse. Can't be engineered away. You can't engineer it into something better. Can't be done, because as the only way you can do that is to turn the morals around, and that's it, period. So you have all of these other countries, and they're depraved too, and they've got their crazy governments, and then you have people that want to go to war with each other. You get the crazy leaders in charge, and they want to go to war, and so then they figure out how to whip their herds up, their respective herds, and then you have all these all this strife and so on and so forth. And so the idea that you're gonna if you just get individuals to travel from one country to the next, that somehow that's gonna, promote world peace somehow or something or other, some pie in the sky thing, is ridiculous, because it is ignoring the basic element. The basic problem is our morals. The basic problem is we've destroyed the family. You destroy the family unit, you destroy it to a large enough extent, and watch out. It's very simple. And that's why there's no political solution to it. There really isn't. So, anyway, I want to go ahead, like I say, I'll save those. And here in a minute, I'm going to go ahead and start reading from Gravity Driven Universe. But before I do that, a while ago, the price on SSDs has been coming down, and it's come down. I became aware that it's come down even more, recently. I don't know. I haven't really been following the prices. But so I ended up ordering, I think it was $72 from Amazon, via Amazon Prime, a Crucial SSD, 120 gigabyte SSD. For this netbook that I'm recording this podcast on right now, this Asus netbook, it's running Windows XP. Of course, I'll have to, kind of install XP on it and so on and so forth, and install the programs on it. But, I primarily use this as a sort of a backup machine, and right now I forgot to replace get the other AC adapter for the MacBook, because I think that's what the problem is. I think the little wire in this one that I've kept in the truck for a while is finally broken, and so the thing won't charge properly. And so when I was home the last time, I forgot to get the wire, and so that's why I've been using this Asus netbook as a backup podcast recorder. And so I think, I ordered this, and for $72, that should really dramatically speed this Asus netbook up, as far as booting, because the boot up is the big problem with any version of Windows, and that's certainly true with Windows XP, And so if I, you know, I install Windows on an SSD on this, you know, it should, you know, I read a little bit online of people that have actually done it. And the guy was saying that the thing would boot up in about 30 seconds. And he was using Windows 7 on an, you know, on a netbook, on an Asus netbook. So XP should work pretty well as well. So so I'll put that on there, and that should kind of dramatically speed things up. And it just, you know, it's nice to have a backup, you know, just having a backup just in case something goes haywire with, you know, main machine. Then I, you know, I still have something that I can use, and it's kind of nice to have something that, you know, is a backup in that case, you know, for especially with a computer, because you never really know what's going to go wrong. Don't expect anything to go wrong, but of course, if you rely on one piece of equipment, eventually something's going to go haywire with it. It's pretty much inevitable. So that it should be interesting whenever I get home, whenever I go home again, install that. And I've still got the, you know, I think this came with the installed, you know, the installed DVDs and what have you, and so I've, those are at home, and I can install that, and it should be interesting to see what it does. So but in any case, for $72, that's pretty cheap performance boost. So anyway, so I'm going to start reading from this Gravity Driven Universe book again, and as I say, we're at the second, or the book 2, and then chapter 10. And so the title of the chapter is Honest and Dishonest Time, and this is a quote from it's a partial quote from Clement of Alexandria, and he lived AD 150 to 220, and this is a quote: "Time was born along with things which exist." And that was Clement of Alexandria. In the last chapter, I stated that primal stillness is the first place away from the creation center, from where space-time coordinates move in a synchronous fashion with that first cause, stillness. It is the first order. It is the first in order, in the order of moving stillness outward bound into the material universe with respect to all other relative stillnesses of the cosmos. Here is where we have, quote, honest, unquote, length, height, width, and time, the basic ground for mathematical science. Although probably nothing in the universe actually moves that slowly, nevertheless, such coordinates exist. This space can be defined theoretically and is everywhere in space-time, moving synchronously with the swirling eye of creation's first cause, stillness. Because the stillness then is first in the order of all the relative moving stillnesses, I gave it the name primal stillness. From the ubiquitous primal stillness coordinates, the speeds of light and matter are regulated, and from here, there, everywhere, all other motions may be measured perfectly in honest time. There, light will be found to be measured at the understood 186,000.272 miles per second. Light also measures the same in distorted time, meaning with respect to objects in motion greater than that of primal stillness. We will get to that soon enough. Remember, whenever primal stillness is, wherever primal stillness is, there too is honest time, that slowest moving space-time where matter placed there can survive as matter. So honest time exists only at the point of primal stillness, which happens to be everywhere in the grid-like converging lines of space-time's revolving orbiting motion. objects do move faster than primal stillness, but never slower. Let me say it again. Since the universe is created out of primal motion, there is a minimum physical velocity at which matter is created and sustained, slower than which matter cannot exist. As mentioned earlier, the basic building block of matter, the ergatron, is a swirl that derives its very form from the original motion itself. It is a no-thing thing. The speed of light should also be measured with respect to its slowest point in space-time, the primal stillness. However, it is not. It is currently defined at the same velocity by observers regardless of their various motions. The main reason for this uniform measurement of light is that whatever an observer's motion is, light velocity is measured there in slower seconds relative to primal stillness seconds. A second is actually faster at primal stillness and slower compared with objects moving faster than primal stillness. In other words, the faster one moves through time, the slower the seconds. Therefore, the speed of light can always be measured as the same regardless of how fast the observer moves, because the faster light is measured in slower seconds. Light is not necessarily constant. It may move in slightly varying speeds, but is always measured the same because whenever it strikes an object, its speed is relative to the observer's slower seconds. Einstein said that light was the only constant and that time varies with the motion of an observer. That is to say, time moving slower for one person than and faster for another. If that is so, how does any observer measure the velocity of light? By time? If light measures at 186,000.272 miles per second in the faster time for one observer, and the same velocity for an observer moving in slower time, what are we saying about light? I think we must be saying that time and light are cofactors. In other words, time, even though it moves slower for one person than another, is constant with respect to light. The speed of light is exactly the same for both observers moving in non-uniform motion with respect to one another. Scientists seem to overlook the fact that their constant of light, supposedly the only one in the universe, is measured by time, yet they say that time slows with faster motion, the very same slower time used to measure light as a constant. It would seem that if light measures the same in slower time, then time must also be constant simply because the speed of light is always expressed in terms of time. So I am saying that the measurement of light is always by the standard of time, and if time is said to move slower, that must say something also about light, which is measured in terms of time. How can it be said that light alone is the constant? Surely time should be included in that perception. Time, light, the relative co-constants. Remember what I've said before. Light has a different relationship with primal space-time in that it does as it encounters matter in motion. In other words, a beam of light traveling through space will be moving relative to the primal stillness exactly at light velocity in honest time. However, when it encounters moving mass, its relativity changes with respect to the time factor of the moving object and to the energy spinning as mass. It is well understood that the faster one travels through space-time, the slower the clock ticks seconds off. This motion faster than primal stillness motion is distorted time, the kind caused by motion itself. Honest time exists only where the ever-present primal stillness space exists. Therefore, it could be said that light can actually move faster, but in slower seconds with respect to objects moving faster than primal stillness. What I am saying is that light moves through space, time with respect to primal space as well as with respect to the motion of objects. In a sense, light could be said to have a double standard, moving at different velocities as when it strikes objects with their own added motion, but always measuring the same in seconds of slower time from each observer's frame of reference. All existence is organized energy, demanding intelligent regulation for universal stability. In order to preserve the integrity of matter, the energy of spinning mass requires a regulating constant, which basically is the pre-time force field whose constant nature regulates time to mass. However, I said that the spinning energy that is matter and whose matter is also in motion through space-time is regulated by the time-pressure-gravity phenomena caused by matter's presence in space-time plus its motion through the dominant regulating pre-time wind. I have claimed that this wind curve of space around matter is time, which exerts varying degrees of pressure on every moving thing in the universe. This phenomenon has been detected in an experiment that contrasted two clocks traveling in non-uniform motion with each other, one in a plane and one on the ground, proving that time does slow down in faster motion. The steady-state acceleration example. As matter is moved in a steady state of acceleration, space-time is compressed and acts as gravity, squeezing the spinning energy mass toward a greater, honest time, light speed. Just like a ball rolling downhill, as mass gathers momentum, it tends to spin faster. If this violation of light velocity within mass were allowed to stand, it would spin too fast, making mass unstable. Happily, there is an equalizing and stabilizing law of physics. The faster motion of mass, producing the compression of a slower time, always equals the need of the velocity of energy in mass as light to remain constant in slower time. In other words, the faster speed in slower time always equals light's constant. If the Earth were catapulted into a steady state of acceleration, we would all experience that extra time distortion of gravity pressure from the direction of the resisting time wind. A voluminous, dense body like our Earth possesses a gravity equivalent to a steady-state acceleration. This is because mass displaces time, space-time by capturing the ether wind pre-time force, which then compresses it in and around mass as the space-time warp pressure of gravity. Hence, for gravity to occur, the Earth need not be in a steady state of acceleration because the warped ether wind pre-time force presses in equally from all sides, affecting a steady state of pressure and thus duplicating the gravity effect by the warping of space-time. In a like manner to steady state acceleration, volume and density affect a similar time-gravity pressure, so that time on a larger planet is slower than time on a smaller planet moving in uniform motion. If one adds the time compression of voluminous mass squeezing the energy moving within it to its motion through space and other time compression influence, it will always equal the time-light equation, which is to say, faster light and slower time equals the constant of light speed. On a mass-sufficient volume, the compression can become heat and eventually nuclear ignition. When a voluminous mass is compressed to the point where energy within it tends to exceed the limit of the time pressure imposed upon it, then the squeezing release of some of the energy bound up in mass as linear radiation, immediately regulated by the push of the ether wind in one direction and the resistance from the other, again the constant, thus a star is born. What if light is fired into infinite space from our newly birthed sun, moving hypothetically at 1,000 miles a minute? Does that mean that the beam of light would move through space forever at 1,000 miles per minute over light speed? No. The time wind resistance coming from the opposite direction would kick in as a regulator. Thus, the measurement of light velocity will always be the same everywhere in the universe, regardless of the motion of 1,000 observers. Just as Einstein said, however, my reasons for saying it are different. I believe the motion of anything should be measured not only with respect to another object with greater or lesser motion, but with primal space-time itself. Not just ordinary space-time, mind you, but with a moving space-time that actually has coordinates, bounded by three-dimensional grid-like crossings of pre-time energy motion flowing out from and revolving about the absolute still creation center of the universe. The moving primal stillness is the birthplace of physics and of matter, with all its mathematical standards of measurement. So we conclude here that the whole of space-time is moving with all bodies dragging in space-time with respect to primal stillness. This being the case again, the interesting news is that the difference between the motion of matter and the motion of space has the potential of imparting usable energy from space-time to matter, gravity being the most obvious case in point, as you will presently see. And so that was chapter 10. So next time we will be ready for chapter 11. So in any case, I think I'm going to bring this to a close. Hope everyone is having a great week so far. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.